time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Dave, we're going to bounce around on several different topics today, but let's start by talking ETF flows. It was actually a slow start to the year, but things have picked up over the past 2 months or so. I actually saw that as of last week, ETFs are now close to 2018's pace, which was the second best year on record. Give us a quick rundown here. What has stood out to you on ETF flows, whether overall or even at the individual ETF level?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely a slow start, and it's really been picking up the last couple of days. Actually, we've had just sort of back-to-back billion-dollar create days, and it's not super surprising that we had a slow start. We were obviously coming off a pretty rough fourth quarter last year. I've been surprised actually how quickly we've recovered from that. I mean, flows do tend to fall off when risk assets overall come down. And then if you look under the hood, we're seeing both some of the same stories we've been talking about for years, but a couple new ones. The same stories for sure are that move from more expensive to less expensive. So if you look year to date, we see things like, you know, SPY, the Spider S&P 500, being down about $10 billion in net flows. But on the other hand, we've got VOO, which is the Vanguard equivalent, which is 5 basis points cheaper, pulling in $5.5 billion. So those kinds of moves, I think, are things we're used to just seeing now. I'd be surprised if that changed. But we're also seeing, moves from sort of traditional short-term treasuries, things like Vanguard's BSV fund, into corporates, into junk. And I think that's actually a pretty smart move investors are making. They're seeing that corporate spreads still look great. You're still getting rewarded for that extra level of risk, and they're willing to move a little bit further out the curve because it seems like, the rate hikes are done, at least for a little while.
All right, so with flows as sort of the backdrop, let's talk about some of the best and worst performing ETFs so far this year. As you mentioned, obviously, there's been a significant bounce back in the markets from the declines of the fourth quarter of 2018. That's clearly been a tailwind. What are some highlights on performance? And I guess for the purposes of our conversation, let's exclude leveraged and inverse ETFs.
Yeah, for sure. And once you throw triple leverage on anything, and all of a sudden it looks either amazing or
terrible.
Tough
to do apples to apples, right?
Yeah. So, they're really, if you look at the winners and losers list sort of for the year so far, there are really a couple of big stories that stand out. The losers list is just overwhelmingly loaded up with commodities. And in a year where, to be honest, almost everything's gone up a little bit, it's so far just been sort of a almost universal bull market for any kind of risk asset. Commodities really have taken it on the chin. Funds like the Tucrium Wheat Fund are down almost 10% for the year. And then you just go through this long list of corn and agricultures and silver, et cetera, et cetera. All these sort of classic trading vehicles that were great in, 2010, things like that, have all taken it on the chin. The big loser, though, I think, is one of the most interesting funds we've seen in a long time, which is the Breakwave Dry Bulk Shipping ETF, which is down a shocking 50% already this year. That's a fund that invests exclusively in shipping futures, which, talk about narrow corners of the market. That's actually kind of a commodity story, too. If you even go to their website and look at their key indicators, it's things like what's China's agricultural demand, what's Brazil's exports look like. They're all very much commodity stories. That's really been the story on the negative side.
What about on the positive side?
Well, we can't do a podcast or two without talking about marijuana ETFs.
Right.
MJ, which is the ETFMG, alternative harvest ETF, the weed ETF, it's up 46% for the year, which is, again, just a shocking run for any portfolio in such a short period of time. There's no question that's hot. But then you go through the rest of the list, and it's China, 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 a little bit of oil, China. I mean, that's pretty much what you've got. And particularly the local Chinese market, the China A-share market, has really been on fire. Depending on what you look at, year-to-date, it's somewhere between 40-45% various takes on that Chinese market, which is a little bit, I think, surprising to some investors who sort of expected this long trade war, which is what's hitting the commodities market, to be more punishing for China. And it certainly was last year, but boy, are they in the midst of a rebound.
Interestingly, looking at the top performing ETF and the worst performing ETF so far this year, I believe ETF Managers Group is involved in both of them. Certainly MJ, and then I believe they're also involved in the Breakwave, right? Dry bulk shipping ETF. You probably don't see that
little,
very often.
Little niche products, right? They built their franchise on that.
We're visiting with ETF.com's Dave Nottig. Dave, with the remaining time we have, I want to get your take on several ETF launches from last week. It was a busy week, and you know, actually, overall, it seems like there's been a lot more activity recently. You know, we touched on how ETF flows were slow to start the year. It felt like that was the case with ETF launches as well. I know the government shutdown impacted that at least a little bit, but that seems to be changing now. Let's start with this SoFi Zero Fee ETF. So the SoFi Select 500 ETF, ticker SFY, and the SoFi Next 500 ETF, SFYX. These both have 19 basis point fees, but SoFi is waiving those fees through at least March of next year. Two questions here. Number one, do you think the fee waiver will remain in place longer term? And then two, do you think these ETFs have any chance of gaining traction outside of the SoFi platform?
You know, I do think that they will probably continue the waiver. I think, you know, this is the hook for these funds. And if they are successful enough to stay open, which I think is an if, then I would expect that waiver to hold. If they, you know, could catch lightning in a bottle and these are billion-dollar funds, I actually think that increases the likelihood that they will not maintain the waiver because they're passing up an enormous amount of income. I think it's much more likely what we see is sort of some middling adoption and continuation of the waiver. These are moderately interesting funds if you look under the hood once you get past the fee waiver. You know, they're basically just large and mid-cap exposure with a little bit of a momentum-y smart beta twist to it. Tough for me to see these getting a ton of attention outside the waiver, but a perfectly solid offering for the folks that are already SoFi customers and want to stick to the brand.
All right, another ETF I have to ask you about is the Procure Space ETF, which launched last week. This has a fantastic ticker symbol, UFO. Any thoughts on this one?
You know, it's really easy to just sort of chuckle because, you know, it's the UFO ETF and all that jazz. And, you know, I'm often fairly critical of very niche sort of subsector ETFs. My criticism usually goes something like this. Well, you can't really get a pure play. You're kind of just investing in a random collection of stocks related to a space. That's not the case here. And that's, I actually think this is an interesting fund. It is a very concentrated portfolio. Most of the holdings in here, you know, 4 or 5% holdings. But it is a legit pure play on the space. Pardon the pun, right? I mean, if you look at the holdings here, it's, you know, Intelsat and EchoStar and Viasat and Inmarsat and Iridium. These are all legitimately companies that are just focused on the satellite and space technology area. If this is a place that you have a lot of passion for, this is one of those rare subsector sort of micro-industry funds, which I actually think delivers what it says it does on the tin.
Yeah, and interestingly, Andrew Channon is one of the individuals behind this ETF. He was behind the HAC ETF years ago, which was obviously a big success. And I should mention that we'll have Bob Toll, who is co-founder and president at Procure AM, on the program in May to spotlight UFO. So certainly look forward to that. All right, some other ETF launches that caught my attention last week were these micro sector ETFs from RecShares. And to be honest, I haven't had a chance to do a deep dive into these yet, but I saw there's like 10 of these now. They're actually ETNs. They cover big banks and then some sort of a FANG index. What are these?
Well, there are actually 15 of them now. And, you know, I this is one of those things to be careful what you say. I was quoted somewhere saying that the ETN market was completely dead, like, I don't know, 4 months ago. And then Rex launched 15 of these darn things with BMO as the bank behind it. So a perfectly reasonable large bank. So no real counterparty risk issues there, which sometimes can be an issue with exchange-traded notes. So these are double and triple leverage, inverse and straight leverage versions of a couple of index. There's a big banks version of these, so for each one of those there's a 2 and a 3 and a inverse and a straight, so that's 4 funds on that index. I think actually I might be missing one in there. I think you can just get a straight exposure index out of it as well. Then there's one for the on big oil, and then there's one on sort of FANG stocks as well. And you know, the idea here is they're taking these really speculative plays that I think a lot of folks use ETFs for, what they might be using some of the select sector spiders, things like, you know, XLF and things like that, and really creating these sort of juiced versions of these for traders. They don't make me super happy just because I'm not sure these are great tools for most investors. You know, as exchange traded notes, they will do what they say on the tin. They will provide the pattern of returns that they're advertising. But boy, talk about volatility. I mean, these things are going to swing 30% on a day.
So do you think there's a longer term market for these things?
There is a segment of the world that uses ETFs primarily as trading vehicles. We tend to talk about them here on this show and at ETF.com as long-term investing vehicles, but there are folks out there who stare at screens all day who use ETFs as short-term trading vehicles, and these are a perfectly legitimate entry into that. I do worry with any of these short-term trading vehicles that investors really understand what they're getting and don't sort of accidentally leave money in these things. They charge almost 1%, 95 basis points or something like that. We'll see whether they get the volumes that are really necessary for them to be good trading vehicles. But as constructed trading vehicles, you know, they do what they say they're going to do.
All right, lastly, the other big news from last week was we got word that it looks like the SEC will be approving Precidian's non-transparent ETF structure. So this is where holdings aren't publicly disclosed on a daily basis. What's your take on this? Are you expecting to see launches here? And is this something investors want?
You know, so I get to polish my nails on my chest a little bit about this one. I've been calling that Precidian would be the first one out of the gate for years at this point. I've lost an infinite number of bets on when, but I at least got the right winner. It is a clean solution to this problem. If the problem issuers have is trying not to disclose their portfolios for their, you know, hot young manager who's chasing small caps or something like that, this solves that problem with a nice, clean, blind trust mechanism. It's complicated, but it makes sense and it's logical, and that's why it got the nod. I would expect to see product hit the street this year based on the filing, not probably the Precidian branded products, but one of the endless number of folks they've got lined up, Gabelli, whoever it is, traditional managers. So we will see those products. Now, the second part of your question, does anybody want these things? The only way we're going to know that is when they actually hit the street. I've been fairly skeptical that this is not solving an actual investor problem, but an issuer problem, and that's a tough way to raise money.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, I think the movement has been towards transparency overall, and these products are taking us away from that. And to your point, I think this solves the fund manager's problem, not an investor's problem. So we'll see. I could be wrong. I'll be surprised if investors gravitate towards these. They are complex when you start looking under the hood. But again, we'll see what happens. Dave, always appreciate you joining us. Look forward to chatting again next week.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
That was ETF.com's Dave Nodig.